So today we're going to learn, we're continuing about Imahais, about the major female figures in the Torah, and we spoke in Sefer Shmos thus far about Yocheved and Miriam. In this week's Parsha, Parshas Yisro, thus we'll speak about Tzipporah. Tzipporah was the wife of Moshe, right? She was the first time we have a first lady whose name is Lady Bird, right? Tzipporah, that's what it means. Tzipporah Eishes Moshe is a very, very significant, interesting personality here in the Torah, both for what she is and for what she isn't. For what she is, the wife of Moshe Rabbeinu, for what she isn't, she doesn't really end up long term, you know, to be so connected, it seems, to Moshe Rabbeinu. Part of the dynamic of the relationship of Moshe Rabbeinu and Tzipporah is the ultimate separation of Moshe Rabbeinu from Tzipporah. Tzipporah was the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu's children, but as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu's children do not figure prominently in any positive way, it seems, for the Bnei Yisrael. In fact, the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, Yonasan ben Gershom, was seemed to have been figuring not positively, negatively, as a Kohen for Pesel Micha, a priest for Avodah Zorah, that was within the Jewish people. So Tzipporah is a very significant and at the same time very enigmatic kind of a figure and a role that she plays within the Bnei Yisrael. And she does appear in this week's Parsha not just as the fact that this is the Parsha of Matan Torah and Moshe Rabbeinu, but in fact, as it says in the beginning of this week's Parsha, Yisro comes to bring back Tzipporah, the wife of Moshe, achar shiluchea, after she was sent off. So we already have the beginnings, although this is not necessarily the ultimate separation of Moshe Rabbeinu and Tzipporah, but this is part of that process. So what I would like to do with you is try to develop an understanding of Tzipporah, of course, of her role. In doing that, we're going to be really also looking very much at Yisro. We'll see how it's not just a regular situation of, okay, she's her father's daughter, but it's much more intently so. As I was putting the heading on the sheet, I said Yisro Tzipporah. It really, last week, when I didn't give you a sheet, but as I started praying, I wrote B'shalach Miriam, right? But here, it's both Parshas Yisro, and it's the relationship of Yisro and Tzipporah to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so let's start a little bit at the beginning. We'll look quickly at the few events that we have, the four events that we have in the Torah surrounding Tzipporah, and then we'll try to look a little bit more broadly at this personality. Well, the Kohen Midian Sheva Bonos. The first one is from Sefer Shmos. Moshe Rabbeinu runs away to Midian. He finds himself, or he positions himself, at the Be'er, at the well. And the verse describes that the Kohen Midian, Kohen means the priest or the leader of Midian, had seven daughters. Vatavoyna vatidlena vatmalena asarhotim. They came and they drew water and they filled up the troughs lashkeses tzoyn avihem, to water the sheep of their father. Vayavayu harayim vayagarshum. And the shepherds came and they chased them away. Vayoka Moshe vayoshion vayashke sona. Moshe came and he saved them and he watered their sheep. He saved them from the shepherds who were chasing them away. The Midrashim, all kinds of things. The shepherds maybe threw them in the water in the well, and Moshe Rabbeinu fished them out. The Midroim may have been attacking them, and Moshe Rabbeinu saved them from that. All kinds of things. But it's already a little bit suspicious. The Kohen Midian, which means either the priest of Midian or the leader of Midian, and this is the way they're treating his daughters. So you know, what do Chazal say? Chazal say he was a leader of Midian. He had been a priest of Midian. However, Yisro had an epiphany. He realized that Avodah Zorah wasn't for him. So he retired from his Avodah Zorah practice, and the people didn't like it at all. And that was when they started acting against Yisro and his family. That's why, according to one version of the Medrash, that's why he has seven daughters going out there shepherding the sheep, because he couldn't hire a shepherd. He was in Cherem, you know. Nobody was willing to hire him, or to be hired by him, to work for him. So that's what's happening over here. So they come to Reuel, And he says, Madua miharten bayayim, you got here so quickly, right? I'm used to with all this harassment, you barely get back. But Taimarna, and they said, Ish Mitzri, hitzilonu miyat harayim. An Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. V'gam daloy dololonu bayashkes hatzon. And he also watered our sheep. He also drew for us and watered our sheep. An Egyptian man saved us, right? Interesting characterization, of course, of Moshe Rabbeinu as an Egyptian man. He looked like an Egyptian man. There's also, by the way, here a beautiful medrash. You know what it means? Well, you know what the medrash says? What does it mean, an Egyptian man saved us? Well, that's, again, the classics are Moshe Rabbeinu was hidden, he looked like an Egyptian, and so on and so forth. But the beautiful pshat the medrash says is, what was Moshe Rabbeinu doing in Midian? He was running away. Why was he running away? Because he had killed an Egyptian. So they said, the fact that that Egyptian was beating up that Jew, and Moshe Rabbeinu was there to kill him, and because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu had to run here, that's what ended up saving us. That Egyptian man beating up the Jew ended up saving us from the shepherds today. Hashgacha. Right? That's what the Medrash says. What?
Oh,
the Egyptian man who was killed by Moshe Rabbeinu saved us today. Because of his oppression, that's how the events turned around. You know, a classic sort of view of Hashgacha Pratis, of a linking of events in order to lead to a certain result. That's what the Medrash, that's one of the Midrashim that you have here. Vayemer el b'nai sav, ve'ayoy, where is this guy? Why did you leave him? Invite him and let him have some bread, which either means invite him over for lunch, or it's a euphemism. He says, finally, I can find a guy for you. Nobody here wants to date you. Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to stay with the man, and he gave his daughter Tzipporah to Moshe, and she gave birth to a child, and so on, and he called the child Gershom, because he was a stranger be'eretz Nachriya. So the girls left him, the father-in-law wanted him, he invited him, and Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to stay with Yisro, and he gave him Tzipora, his daughter, as a wife. Okay, first part of the story. But who did Moshe Rabbeinu marry, Tzipora or Yisro? Right? In other words, it almost, in a certain sense, like Yisro initiates, he agrees to stay with Yisro. Okay, we'll see a little bit more. Yeah.
I thought it was later. So you're saying there wasn't any influence on Moshe's part that made Yisro come to believe in
right. According to the classic Midrashim, Yisro had already abandoned Avodah Zarah by the time Moshe Rabbeinu showed up. He didn't necessarily join the Jewish people. He abandoned that before he showed up. Next. Next story which we have with Tzipporah is a very cryptic story. The story of Moshe Rabbeinu coming down to Mitzrayim with his wife and children, and then he has this attack, right? Hashem wanted to kill him. Why? Well, we don't know exactly from the verse itself. It says Hashem encountered him and wanted to kill him. So Tzipporah took a rock, vatikach, vayibaderech ba'malon, vayivkesheu Hashem, vayivakesh hamiso. As he was at the inn, Hashem wanted to kill him. Vatikach Tzipporah tzor, vatichras esor laspino. So Tzipporah went, she took a rock, a sharp flint, and she cut the orla, she did a bris on her son. That's when Hashem left Moshe Rabbeinu alone. So Tzipporah saved Moshe Rabbeinu's life. How did she save Moshe Rabbeinu's life? By giving a bris to their son. Interesting story. Okay? We'll leave it for now at that. Next. The beginning of this week's parsha. Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, hears everything which Hashem did to Moshe and to Israel, his people, that Hashem took Israel out of Mitzrayim. Vayikach Yisro chosen Moshe es Tzipporah eshes Moshe achar shiluchah. So he takes Tzipporah after she had been sent away. Obviously, Yisro is in Midian. He's coming to join the Jewish people. Tzipporah is with him. So she wasn't with Moshe anymore. Somewhere between when they were traveling back to Mitzrayim and now they had separated. And the two sons. So Yisro comes, Ubana v'ishto, and his children of Moshe, and his wife come to Moshe to the Midbar. And he says to Moshe, sending a message, I'm your father in law Yisro coming to you, v'ishtacha, and your wife, Ushnei v'ne'a ima, along with her two sons who are with her. V'yetzei Moshe, and Moshe went out. What would you? How would you finish it off? But it doesn't say that, right? You say he go to see his wife, see his kids. Vayetze Moshe likras chosno. He went out to greet his father-in-law. Vayishtachu vayishachlo. He bowed and he kissed him. Vayishalu ish l'reyu l'sholem. And they greeted each other. Vayavayu ha'ela. Okay. So would that perhaps reinforce a little bit of the thesis that Moshe Rabbeinu was very focused on this relationship with Yisro as he was married to Tzipora? Well, maybe it's simple derech eretz. You know, his wife and his father-in-law, he has a big chiyuv of, you know, like kibbutz to his father-in-law, as much as he may have been more affectionate or whatever it was with his wife. But, you know, the kavod derech eretz, that's one way to read it, and that's the way some Rishonim read it. But again, Yisro looms very, very large. Okay, one more story, and this is the last story that we have about Tzipora in the Torah, is here, interestingly, Tzipora's name isn't mentioned. There are midrashim that claim that this is talking about a different Cushi wife that Moshe Rabbeinu was married to. He was married to somebody else before he was married to Tzipora. There's an amazing midrash brought in the Yalkut about a whole story about Moshe Rabbeinu becoming a king in Cush before he ended up in Midian. He ran from Mitzrayim to Cush, where he was a hero and a king, and then he had to run away from Cush also, and then he married Tzipora. But we're not going to go there. Okay, that's a very, very obscure sort of version of the story. Simply, Isha Cushis refers to Tzipora, and it's for one of a couple of reasons. One possible reason is because Cush and Midian are related. They're all from the same family, and therefore, loosely, she is called Isha Cushis. And the other basic approach, one which is made more famous by Rashi, is that Cushis refers to Cushis is Ethiopian, dark, and Tzipora was extremely fair and beautiful. And so she spoke of her, like how do you know in Hebrew, when you speak about Le'olenu, a blind person, what do we call him? We call him a saginor, a person with a lot of light. What's that? We call that in English a euphemism, right? It's really the opposite of that. It's not a lot of light. He's living in darkness, unfortunately. So when it referred to Tzipora, who was so beautiful and fair, they referred to her as Isha Kushis, as the, what would seem to perhaps be the opposite of fair. That was what the, that's the way it was, some understand. And some understand it, whatever. Those are the two basic understandings. We're going to leave it for now. But the issue of this story is, that Miriam and Aaron are complaining that Moshe Rabbeinu left his Isha Cushis. Not that he married her, but that at this point, he's not with her anymore. Why are you leaving off Tzipora? Oh, you're leaving off Tzipora for reasons that you're a prophet, and you can't be in a normal marriage because you're a prophet? We're also prophets, and we are in our marriage. Harakach b'Moshe, diber Hashem, alo gam banu diber. And the answer Hashem gives is, of course, no comparison. Moshe is a qualitatively different prophet than you, Miriam, and than you, Aaron, are. Moshe is completely different. He can't be in this marriage while he's a prophet. You can be in your marriages while you're married. And of course, from this, Miriam gets tsaras. She gets leprosy. Jewish people wait 7 days while she's going through that, and then they travel on. Okay. So these are the four stories we have. The first story we have is about the marriage, the whole story around the well and everything else. The second story we have is about the Bris Milah. The third story we have is about Yisro coming back, bringing Tzipora some level of separation to begin with. And the fourth story we have is about Moshe Rabbeinu separating from Tzipora. Okay. So what are we going to do with this right now at this point in time? How do we begin to study, to understand how these pieces would exist, would come together around this. So let's start with the beginning, with Tzipora and her origins and this story. Okay. Source Hay on your sheet is the Medrash Rabbah in Shmos, in Parsha Shmos, where it discusses this story. Because we have said much of the content of this medrash outside, we don't have to necessarily read it all inside. The first part describes what exactly happened about with Yisro. But let's really read with the opening line. Because the opening line presents the problem, the issue, at least part of the problem, part of the issue. Ulekohen Midyan Sheva Banos, says the Medrash, V'alo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sone Avodas Kochavim, Hashem despises Avodah Zarah, idol worship. V'nosan Manos L'Moshe Eitzel Oved Avodas Kochavim, and the place of refuge chosen for Moshe is by an Oved Avodah Zarah. The Medrash is, of course, taking Kohen Midyan, as understood to mean the priest of Midyan. So, of all places, Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to escape. Moshe Rabbeinu, who's going to be the Nosei in HaTorah, is supposed to escape to the house of the priest of Midyan? That seems rather ironic, strange. Why does Hashem choose this method of all? Elo Amar Rabbeinu. So the Medrash goes on and tells us that Yisrael was a former priest for Avodah Zarah, but he gave it up. Right? He didn't believe in it. He didn't see that it had anything to it. And so when he tried to tell people that he wanted to do tshuva, right, before Moshe Rabbeinu came out, said the Medrash, when he told the people of his city, boom, everything fell in on him. And that's why his daughters had to do this whole thing. Okay. The Medrash tells us Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't really a Mitzri. He was dressed like a Mitzri, but on the other hand, he was an Ivri, he was a Jew. And so on, and then it says in the Medrash, Dolei Dolei Lanu, they told Yisro, you know, a strange thing happened when he was drawing the water. Like in one fell swoop, he drew one bucket, and it was enough for all of the sheep. It was like suddenly the waters just grew and expanded. Yisro heard that, he says, oh my goodness, I've heard stories about things like that happening before. That's what happened with Yaakov Avinu. He must be from the descendants of Yaakov Avinu, because that's what happened with him. You can't leave him alone. Maybe he'll marry one of you, right? And that's how he comes to invite Moshe Rabbeinu home. And the Medrash ends. Okay, you see the underlined portion, the end of the paragraph. Miyad rotisa tzipora acharov. Immediately, Tzipora ran after him. He had seven daughters. Tzipora ran after him, kitzipor, like a birdie. And she brought him home. Now the Medrash here is already giving you an explanation for this interesting name that she has, right? Birdie, or birdette. I don't know what you would call it. It's a female bird, right? So what's the meaning of this name? So the Medrash already is giving you a reason. And it's saying because she ran after him like a bird. In other words, she was, as we say, she was flying. You know, she ran after him quickly. That's a partial reason. The Medrash continues and says, V'loma nikra shema Tzipora. Why is her name called Tzipora? And it gives us another reason. Shetiara habayis ketzipor. She purified the house like a bird. What does that mean, she purified the house like a bird? Because we know that later in the Torah, the bird is used, the birds are used for the purification process. Specifically, we find of a mitzvah, of a leper. Right? By a mitzvah, when he finishes his period of leprosy, so there's two birds, one is shechted, one is, and the other one is dipped in the blood of the other and sent to fly off. Tzipora was also a purifier. She purified her house, the house, like a tzipor. What is this house referring to? You'll see that it's understood that on two different levels. Right? The way many understand is that she was purifying her father's house, like a tzipor. And the other version is, as you're going to have, right, brought in Rabbeinu Bachya, Vayiten es tzipor abito l'moshe, next source, Nikres tzipor miloshan tzipor shu ov tohar. Tzipor is a kosher bird. In fact, the term tzipor is only used, it's not used for all birds, it's only used to refer to kosher birds. Because she was going to purify herself. Okay, now that's not the language of the Medrash, which says that she would purify the house, right? She purified herself. So again, Tzipor as symbolic of purity. Just to complete a little bit of the picture, so we have here two interpretations. Tzipor as running, Tzipor as purity. And there's also another version, which is found, Chizkuni brings in Midrashim, which is Tzipora, first Shiratzel, it's Ketzipor Likro L'Moshe. She ran like a bird. Davar Acher, Haiseyafa Umi'ira Kebaikir, Devin Targmina Tzafra. the morning is called Safra in Aramaic. You may, it could be because it's the birds chirping, right? Are the sounds perhaps of the morning, of the sun coming. But it's called Safra. And therefore it's a term for brightness. And it's a description of her beauty. She was beautiful. She was bright like the morning. Okay, so these are the Midrash. This is some of the Midrash. So what I would like to focus with you upon is not upon the Midrash about her beauty, in which we have so many of the great imahis are going to be described in those terms. We're not even going to talk for now about the fact that she ran. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I want to talk about with you the fact of the purification of her house. The essential question which is asked at the beginning of this piece of Medrash, which is, why did Hashem choose to save Moshe Rabbeinu specifically, have it happen specifically, that he should go to the house of the priest of Avodah Zarah? Now we can take this Medrash and say, oh, the Medrash answered the question. No problem. He wasn't a priest of Avodah Zarah anymore. Okay, got rid of the negativity. But tell me something. Does that really answer the question fully, just the way I said it now? Okay, he didn't have to go into a house of Avodah Zarah. Is it, of course, not to be seen as significant that in this house, which was a house of Avodah Zarah, which was a house of a priest of Avodah Zarah, and that he went through, he has some kind of changes and regret and so on within himself, and this is where Moshe Rabbeinu specifically not only finds refuge, but finds his wife. And his wife is called Tzipora, says the Medrash, because she was involved in the purification of that house. There's something significant here that we have to see in the specifics of Moshe Rabbeinu becoming attached to the house of Yisro, and what that means, this change which is being made indeed within Yisro. So I want to learn with you another Medrash, a very interesting Medrash. The Medrash says, Medrash Tanchuma, source Chesan Yoshid, Medrash Tanchuma, Yisro, Parsha Perakei, in our Parsha. The Medrash says, Tov Shochen Korov Me'ach Rochok. The Pasuk says in Mishle, right, it is better a shochein korov, a neighbor who is close, than a brother who is far. A neighbor who is close is better than a brother who is far. Now Hasidim, by the way, like to translate this pasuk differently. They say, what do you mean? How can anything be better than family? So they say, toiv shochein korov. It's good, a close neighbor. But me'ach, from a brother, rochek, it's not even close. It right, doesn't compare to a brother. Right, that's the way, you know, typical sort of move the comma, right? But the pasuk is contrasting. It's Mishle Proverbs. So the Medrash says like this: we're contrasting that there could be someone who again is a shochein, it's not naturally connected, just comes close, as opposed to someone who's naturally connected and distant. And the Medrash draws a contrast in this between two people, Yisro and Esav. Yisro is the Shochein Korov, and Esav is the Ach Rochok, is the distant brother, says the Medrash. Ze Yisro, Shoyo Korov Li Yisrael, min Esav Achiv Shel Yaakov. Yisro, who was a foreigner, was closer to the Jewish people than Esav, the brother of Yaakov. Shol said to the Keni is Yisro. Yisro is from there. Go, move away from the Amaleki. I don't want to destroy them with you. I don't want to destroy you with them, rather. You did such kindness with the Jewish people when they came out of Mitzrayim, right? This is our parsha. He came out. And Keni left Amalek. Okay, now, look what we have there. Look how the pasuk is, this is already the first point of the Medrash. Amalek is whom? Esav, the descendant of Esav. It's a child of Esav. Grandchild of Esav, rather. So we say, the pasuk says, I'm about to destroy the Amalek, I'm about to destroy the Esav contingent. Yisro, move away from them. I don't want to destroy you. So you see, different treatment of the new good neighbor than of the old but distant brother. And then the Medrash goes on in typical midrashic fashion. You find a litany of things that are said as a praise to Esav, and we find exactly the same thing on the negative side for Yisrael, on the negative side for Esav. By Esav it says that they came in Lo'aleinu and they tortured women in Tzion in Yerushalayim. By Yisro, it says he gave his daughter to Moshe Rabbeinu for a wife. Right? Now, it's like the opposite kind of a thing. It's not, you might say it's not exactly the opposite. Right? It would be better maybe if they were marrying a thing. But here, the Jewish people were treating the daughters of Yisro so beautifully, while Esav was treating the daughters of the Jewish people so horribly. Be'esav ksiv, ochle ami achlu lechem. By Esav, we refer to those who want to consume, to eat up our people, as they eat bread. By Yisro, it says, we invited him over to eat bread with us. Right? Yisro invited us to eat bread with him, and in fact, we later, Moshe Rabbeinu, set the table for Yisro. By Esav, translate Amalek, it says they were not God-fearing. Right? And that's in the story of Amalek in Parshas Kisetze. By Yisro, ksiv, when Yisro gave his advice in this week's Parsha to choose judges, what was the first criterion? Yirei Elokim, people who are God-fearing. Right? Esav doesn't care about being God-fearing. Yisro puts it as qualification number one. Be'esav ksiv shu batel es ha-karbonos. By Esav, we know he destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, stopped the offerings from being brought. Yisro came to Moshe in this week's Parsha and he offered karbonos. Esav shama tzarosan v'nizdavig lem shenema ariv neizov anos asam v'chach ksiv ayove amalek. When Esav heard that the Jewish people had troubles, what did he do? He said, let me pounce on them. In last week's parsha, they were getting tension with Hashem. Amalek comes in and jumps in. By Yisro shama b'tevosan, he heard good things happening to the Jewish people and he joined them. Shenema by Yishma Yisro. So this is a typical medrash, beautiful, elegant, taking Eov and Yisro and Esav and Amalek and seeing them as two opposites. And what's the opposite? Esav is a person who was the son of Yitzchak and the grandson of Avram Avinu and the twin brother of Yaakov Avinu. But he has made himself so alien, so hostile to the Jewish people, that this brotherhood, what's it worth? Okay, so we don't treat Esav the way we might treat other nations because he was our brother once. Right? That's what it says. With the exception of Amalek, of course. But Esav, right? Way, he was part of us and he's gone. Yisro represents the opposite. Someone who was outside of us, not part of the Jewish people. Not only was he not part of us, but he was Kanoivet Avodah Zarah, par excellence. In the Medrash it says, in the Mechilta it says, that Yisro did not leave one Avodah Zarah in the world that he didn't experiment with. And he becomes a good neighbor. He becomes attached to the Jewish people. Esav is leaving, Yisro is coming. So this, perhaps, can start to help us to crystallize a little bit the role that we have here of Yisro. When the Medrash says, why is Hashem having Moshe Rabbeinu being saved by an Oved Avodah Zarah? Well, part of this is that that's exactly what's happening. That this former Oved Avodah Zarah is being brought into the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself is doing it by virtue of this marriage. In a sense, Tzipora, okay, she's an important part of it. It's through Tzipora that Moshe Rabbeinu is being brought into the Jewish people. Tzipora purified the house. It was through the marriage to Tzipora that this relationship with Yisro became solidified. But to a certain degree, as we saw indicated in the Psukim before, there is indeed a great emphasis on Yisro coming in and becoming part of the people. Okay. Very good. So that's going to be here an element of significance. Moshe Rabbeinu reaching out beyond and bringing in Yisro, that which would be a little bit out to the side, bringing it into the B'nai Yisrael. Now, let's go to the other end. This was about Moshe Rabbeinu's marriage to Tzipora. Bringing in someone who was outside, who was not an ach, who was not naturally part of the scene, and nevertheless making them a part of it. Now let's go to Moshe Rabbeinu leaving Tzipora. And let's just fill ourselves in on things which, in fact, really we know about to some degree already. Uminayin hoisa yodas Miriam. This is a medrash elsewhere. Midrash in Parshas Tzav, Tanchuma. How did Miriam know Shapirish Moshe min Ha'isha? How did Miriam know to make a big ruckus about this? Rav Nosson Aymer, Miriam haisa b'tzad tipora k'sha'omu l'moshe eldad u'meidad mistabim b'machane. Miriam was standing next to Tzipora when this story happened in Parshas Behalos. Right before Miriam and Aaron start complaining about Moshe leaving his wife. What's the story before then? It's about these two renegade Nevi'im, Eldad u'Meidad, who were prophesizing on their own in the camp. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told about it. And Miriam heard, was standing next to Tzipora, v'kivan sheshama Tzipora, she heard, when Tzipora heard this Amra, she said, oy lehem l'nishoseim shalelu. Tzipora said, oy, they're poor wives, Eldad u'Meidad. They became a prophet too. Right, they're poor wives. That was Tzipora's comment that she made under her breath. So she said, Miriam said, ooh, what do you mean they're poor wives? And then she found out that Moshe Rabbeinu had effectively left Tzipora. When did Moshe Rabbeinu separate from Tzipora? From the way of the world? That's what it refers to it as. Ela b'shosh amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe b'Sinai k'edem matan Torah she'ikadeh es ha'am. When Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai before the giving of the Torah, in this week's Parsha, sanctify the people, right? For 3 days they weren't supposed to approach their wives in anticipation of Am Torah. Everybody. They separated, so did Moshe. Why not? The Achar Matan Torah. But after the Torah was given, Hashem said to Moshe, Leich emor lohem shuvu lachem lo'alechem. You go tell them they should go back to their tents. And you, you stay here with me. What does that mean? You don't go back to normal life. They should, but not you. That was when Moshe Rabbeinu's separation from his wife was final. So when Tzipora made this comment and she said, oh, they became the Nevi'im too, now they're going to leave their wives, poor women. So Miriam realized that what had happened, the Yidol Aaron, she told Aaron, and so on and so forth. So the Medrash goes on and says, oh, if Miriam, who wasn't trying Chas V'Shalom to ridicule Moshe Rabbeinu, right? But nevertheless, this is what happened to her when she spoke negatively, Loshon Hara of him, how much more so a person who's really just trying to destroy somebody. And the Pasuk goes on, Kisha Kushis, Kushis Begimatri Fast Marit, the numerical value of the word Kushis is beautiful. And it goes on to discuss why she's referred to as Isha Hakushis, and so on and so forth. And the Medrash ends and says that there is such a woman who's Noa B'Yefya Ve'ena Noa B'Masel. There's a woman who's beautiful but doesn't do nice things. Beautiful in her looks, not beautiful in her deeds. And there's a woman who's beautiful in her deeds, right, but not beautiful in her looks. Tzipora was Noa B'Kol. Tzipora was beautiful in the way she looked, and she was beautiful in the way she was, the way she behaved. V'ata girsha, and you just divorced her, Miriam said to Moshe Rabbeinu, and so on and so forth. Okay. So here we have that the circumstances for Moshe Rabbeinu separating from Tzipora was because Moshe Rabbeinu had been sanctified to become so attached to Hashem that there wasn't really room for anything else. Think about what we have here. On the one hand, we have Moshe Rabbeinu reaching out to a non-Jew, an idol worshiper, and bringing him into the Jewish people. Okay, that's one direction. You would have Moshe Rabbeinu. You don't have any arrows. I don't know how to visualize this, but you know Moshe Rabbeinu is going outside of the circle and broadening it. Right, coming in and including somebody else, a whole other world into his circle. That's one side. Then, we have another side. Moshe Rabbeinu divorces Tzipora. What does that mean? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is now going to be so attached to Hashem, his circle has no room for even his wife. And of course, we can only assume that it wouldn't matter, so to speak, whether he was married to Tzipora or whether he was married to a JFB. You know, it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever. He would still. He was completely to be attached to Hashem, and therefore he couldn't. So on the one hand, you have a tremendous expansion of the circle that includes Tzipora and Yisro from the outside. And on the other hand, you have a great narrowing of the circle, a great narrowing of the circle that indeed becomes contained only to Moshe Rabbeinu. Two different directions that are happening here. I understand it's not exactly the same, but you understand basically that we have things going here in two different directions. I want to share with you one more medrash, and this is an important and fascinating medrash which requires a lot of understanding and thought. It's a medrash not from this week's parsha, but from Parshas Ki Tisa, the story of the Egel. And in that medrash, the medrash speaks about Moshe Rabbeinu's conversation with Hashem, right, where Hashem says to him, informs him about the Egel. And the words which Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu are, Lech Reid, go down from the mountain. They were on the mountain at the time. Moshe was there privately with Hashem getting the Torah. Ki Shicheis Amcha. Because your nation that you took out of Mitzrayim, they have corrupted themselves. They have destroyed. They have self-destructed. Your people. Now, on a simple level, right, if you look at that parsha, they go back and forth. Moshe Rabbeinu calls Hashem's people, Hashem calls them Moshe Rabbeinu. It's sort of like, you know, when your child misbehaves, you know, so you tell your spouse, did you see what your son did? You know, something like that. You know, like a real notion of taking responsibility. Right? So there's a certain thing there. But the Medrash says, no. Lech Reit Kishichei Samcha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, what do you mean, Amcha? My people. Hashem says, your people. Why? Because what brought on the Egel? What brought on the Egel was a group of people who the Torah calls the Erev Rav. The Gam Erev Rav Ola Itam. An Erev Rav, a big mixture of people came up with them. When the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, the Jewish people were riding high. And the smart money was on the Jews. So therefore there were people from Mitzrayim who said, we're going with them. We're not just going to stay behind you after they leave. We're going with them. As we find as well in the story of Purim, a lot of the nations of the world, they wanted to become Jews because, you know, the tide was turning in favor of the Jews. Moshe Rabbeinu brought them along. He agreed to let them come along. Says the Medrash, Hashem was not happy with this. Ha'am ain't sivkan, ela amcha. It doesn't say the people, it says your people. Rabbeinu Shalom says, minayin heim ami, why are you calling them my people? Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, amcha heim, she'ad shayu b'mitzrayim amarti lach, in Mitzrayim I told you, v'hotzeisi es tzivosai es ami. I told you, take my hosts, my nation. Amarti lach shelo la'arev b'hem erev rav. I told you not to mix in others. Ata shayisa ana v'kasher, but you're humble. And you're good, a gutzkeit. You can't say no. Amarta li lo'ayla mekablim hashavim. You said, come on, they want to do tshuva. Why shouldn't we take them in? They see that we're right. They want to join us. Come on. Vani ayisi aydea ma'im asidim lasis. I knew that they would be trouble. Amarti loch lav. I told you, don't. V'yasisi ritzaincha. But nevertheless, I did your will. In the end, I said, okay. You want them to come. If that's the way you want it, then you can have it. But the heim she'asu es ha'egel. They were the ones who made the egel. That's what it says.
They killed their own brothers, their own
families, they got everybody else to join in. But the ones who created the problem were the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav started it. That's the Medrash goes on and says, remember what's the expression? Eile Elohecha Yisrael. This is your God. These are your gods, Israel. Yours. What do you mean? Not right? Because it was these quote-unquote outsiders who had joined on to the Jewish people who were now addressing them. These are not, right? Chazal tell us, the Gemara says, Geirim we accept not in the times of Mashiach, not in the times of David and Shlomo Melech, not in the times of Yitzias Mitzrayim, where they're coming to the right side, you know, the obvious thing. We want people who are coming, as we say, a Geir who comes to convert nowadays, we tell them, do you know that to be a Jew means to be downtrodden, to be suffering, to be the object of all kinds of opposition and anti-Semitism? And the person says, I realize that, but I want to be part of the Jewish people. Halavai, I could still be a part of this people. Then we accept them. Moshe Rabbeinu was taking them at this time. Hashem said, they're not going to be the right ones. They're just not going to be the right ones. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem allowed Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead with it anyway. And it came back to bite them here at the Maaseh HaEgel. Now this is interesting, because we see here a point of essential contention between, as hard as it is to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. Then Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, let's broaden the circle. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, don't broaden the circle. Narrow it. Moshe Rabbeinu invites Yisro in the one section which we don't have here on the sheet, but is also there in that area of the Haloscha, right, where the which is about, not about Tzipora, but about Yisro, Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to insist that Yisro should come along with them. You know how it was in the Midbar. Come with us to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is expansive. He wants to include. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to a certain degree, is narrowing and saying, no, 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 don't. Don't. He's saying it there in the broader sense. And it was Hashem who told Moshe Rabbeinu that for Moshe Rabbeinu himself, he had to separate from Tzipora. He had to separate from his wife. That was a narrowing which was not by Moshe Rabbeinu's initiative. That was a narrowing which was very much from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's initiative. Tell them to go back home. You stay here. The Gemara says, I want to give you full disclosure, the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu, right, Pirish Min Aisha, he did it midato. He did it to some degree by himself. But the Gemara says, where did he get it from? He understood from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that that was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to do. It wasn't an initiative of Moshe Rabbeinu that he was something which he was eager to do. It's a little bit beyond the scope of our conversation to demonstrate exactly how we can see that it really, really wasn't within Moshe Rabbeinu's nature to separate himself. We see it from many other things in that note, in that idea, but it is very, very much the case. That's the Nizma Shireinu. So two, to some degree, opposite directions. The direction of integration, the direction of separation. Yeah.
So really, from the history of the world, Hashem saw that we had to narrow the circle, because he started out with Adam and then Noah and kept narrowing it down. Now Moshe was like saying he's smarter than God. You think he would say, okay, God, I think you've got a better perspective on this, your judgment. You know, like, when we try to be smarter than God, it sort of goes back to him.
Yeah, generally speaking, I think that's true. that's true. And we have to understand, you know, what's happening in the Medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was there actually a debate, and Hashem said to Moshe, don't do it, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, but I want to do it, right? You know, one has to understand how these dialogues are portrayed in Medrash. Clearly, what the Medrash is saying is that in this, Moshe Rabbeinu was not drawing his signals from Hashem. This was something of an initiative of Moshe Rabbeinu, something which, to him, he felt it was sensible, this is what should be done. It was not something which was drawn from Hashem. Whether he was going in open rebellion, so to speak, against what Hashem asked him to do, I'm not ready to say.
It sounds like he's using his insight, though. Like, you know, like if you go to a neurosurgeon, he tells you need an operation, he says, no, I'll just take an aspirin, you know? That'll be
right.
Fine. I mean, you have to know who
right.
Has the greater power of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't point blank say don't do this. There was some question for Moshe. It was wiggle room.
Right. Right.
The question then is, why does Hashem allow Moshe to go ahead and know
this? Right. So Hashem allows Moshe Rabbeinu to do it. Hashem very often allows people to do things that are not necessarily exactly the way Hashem would want to do it. But this is clearly, again, this was Moshe Rabbeinu doing something which was his inclination. The broadening was his inclination to be able to do so, as opposed to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted in this particular circumstance, which was that this should not happen. This should not happen.
That's the whole history of the Jews. Yeah. Hmm?
Huge consequences.
He's saying, my plan, this, but.
Right? We do it every time. Yeah. Okay. Okay. We have one story which we haven't discussed at all. Like, what was that story? That was the story of the bris mila of Tzipora, that Tzipora does. Now, that's very, very much a part of this. Tzipora does the bris. Right? You have here, to some degree, on your sheet, I copied some of the Mefarshim. What is it? Tzipora is the one who's doing the bris. You look at Rabbeinu Bachi, you look at the Chizkuni, they struggle with this question. And they say, like this, you know, Tzipora was the one who had to do the bris. Why? And they base it, to some degree, on another Medrash. It probably could be said without the Medrash, without that particular fill-in of the story. But this is the story of the Medrash. The story of the Medrash is that when Yisro said Moshe Rabbeinu would be his son-in-law, he had one request. Famous last words. And what was the one request? The request was, he says, look, your son, your first son that's born, I want him to be able to try Avodah Zarah too. Look, I went through this process. I searched. I traveled. I went to India. I went to Tibet. I went to Berkeley, right? I went everywhere, and you know, I ended up becoming, you know, turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want your child to go through the same thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu agreed, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "What's going on over here? You're coming back to Mitzrayim. You're bringing your wife and your child to Mitzrayim. What does it mean to Mitzrayim? It means to the Jewish people, and you're bringing this." "Quote unquote open-mindedness. You're bringing this, you know, you're bringing this Avodah Zarah into the Jewish people." So Tzipora did the bris. Tzipora took the tzor, because it was this broadening, which here is seen to be a little bit of a broadening without sufficient discrimination, more easily, right? You know, more easily than the original thing, that had to be corrected here. So all these things, again, there's much more to talk about in that story, but just that as a snapshot. You see, again, it's very, very much part of this dynamic. Okay. So now, we see a little bit here of this tension. Well, let me try to help us to bring this together a little bit. And really what I'm going to teach you here is basically built on Maral in the 19th chapter of the Gvuras Hashem. The Maral, it's photocopy at the bottom of your sheet. I'm just leaving pieces of it. It's a magnificent piece. The whole piece gives two sides, magnificent piece. But he talks about the following. Tzipora's name is Bird. She's a bird. That's like a bird. She purifies the house like a bird. What is a bird? What is this kind of a comparison? Why is the bird that which is used to be able to purify? To purify the Mitzvah, for instance, the leper, for instance. Chazal tell us very interesting things about birds. There are certain things which we know about birds without Chazal telling us. One is that birds, they fly. They fly means they move very, very, very quickly. It also means that they get altitude, right? They get off the ground. They get off the ground. You know, off the ground, in a sense, the way we view things is a good thing, right? Sometimes we say we have to be grounded, you know, in order to be realistic. But on the other hand, we know, as the Chazal say, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina never became within 10 tefachim of the ground. Hashem's Shechina never became within 10 tefachim of the ground. Hashem's above, and the bird flies. Right? If man and animal occupy the land and fish occupy the sea, the birds are oif hashamayim, they occupy the heavens. And in a certain sense, the bird represents that aspect, that about us. Right? As the Maharal says, when something is just a physical gob, right, death, so then what happens? They don't move at all. There's no movement whatsoever. So a live thing moves. And something which moves and flies and goes like that, that's life compounded. When we speak about the birds purifying from tsaras, tsaras is leprosy. It's a little bit of death, you know, in that patch of skin and that part of the body. And it becomes purified by the tzipora, by the tzipor that represents the bird, the life, the flying, the strength, the movement. That's what it is. That's the contrast between those two. That's what the tzipor is there to accomplish. And so Maral, you know, in his first paragraph, he speaks about this idea. He says, you know, and that he had seven daughters, and the seven is always the number which leads to Shabbos, to completion, to purity, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu comes to take. And it's, you know, all this beautiful picture of vitality and spirituality and the loftiness of the bird. Maral has a second paragraph. And the second paragraph, he introduces another thing about birds, which is also found in the Gemara. And he explores it in a very interesting way. Very interesting way. He says like this. The Gemara says, what were birds created from? It's a very strange thing. If you look in the first account, on the fifth day of creation, it says that Yishutu Hamayim Sheret Nefesh Chaya, the water should sprout forth the water organisms, and the eif, and the bird, which makes it sound like birds were created from the water. On the other hand, in the second chapter of Bereishis, it makes it sound like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that the birds would come from the earth. So, like the animals. So do they come from the earth, or do they come from the water? You know, whatever, the water, the clouds, whatever. So the Gemara says, you know what they come from? They come from the rakak. What's the rakak? The rakak is, you know, that part of the beach where the water meets the land. That's where they come from. Rekak, resh kuf kuf. It's an unusual word. It's from the place where the water meets the land. In Yiddish, we have a word for that. What's that word? A phrase for that. Nishtahin u nishtaher. Right? Neither here nor there. It's not from the ground. It's not from the water. It's somewhere from in between. So the Maral says a beautiful thing. And he says, you know what was about Yisrael? It says Yisrael. He served every Avodah Zarah in the world. You know what that means? It means he was nishtahin or nishtaher. He wasn't rooted in any other place. He was with this Avodah Zarah, he tried it. He was with that Avodah Zarah, he tried it. That's where the possibility came, because he wasn't really stuck in something else. That's why, to a great degree, he was able to come back. Now, I want to take these concepts of the Maral and really just maybe just use them a slightly differently and try to understand here, because indeed the birds, they are in between. As the Gemara says, the earth, the water, birds, they fly in the sky, they come to roost down here on this earth. Now, they represent a lot of what we represent. What Rashi teaches us as to the reason why birds are used to purify the Metzora is because birds and people have something in common. They both chirp a lot, right? The power of speech is what brings a person, well, enu tzaras, when it's misused. So the purification comes from birds, which are called also patkepanim, but they talk. But they talk. Now, birds maybe don't talk like people. Not maybe, definitely. They don't talk quite like people. But somehow, just like a human being, who, while when we look at ourselves physically, we're completely feet on the ground, everything else, but part of us is someplace else. Part of us came from someplace else. Part of us flies, rises up. Part of us is like the malachim, like the angels. And when we daven and we say Kedusha, and we say we want to sanctify Hashem in this world, we jump up on our feet to sort of try to gain altitude. You know, we're trying to get up there like the malachim, like the angels, get off the ground, like those birds that HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed them with the ability to fly, to go up there. We're between here and there. The birds, they're to some degree between here and there. And to the extent that we're between here and there, lies, in a sense, our greatest potential. It makes us, in a way, better than the malachim, right? Better than the angels, because, you know, they're going to be able, they're just flying out there. They have no connection to be able to make that which is down here into something special. But for human beings, no. It's different. For us, we're indeed able, to some degree, to go beyond. We're able to somehow bring the material world into the picture. But there is, and there isn't. There is that which we are able to bring in, there's that which we are not going to be so able to bring in. Moshe Rabbeinu, in a sense, was part of the Jewish people. He always tried to make himself part of the Jewish people. But on the other hand, he was removed from the Jewish people. He was made into an Isha Elokim. He was made into a man of God. And at the same time, to some degree, the way he was made into a man of God was by HaKadosh Baruch Hu isolating from the Jewish people and making him into an Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian man. He's part of this dynamic which HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates of separating this man of God, separating this man of God by removing him from his people so that somehow he can bring them up or go to the heavens to get the Torah and to bring it down to them. But the guarding and the defining of the boundaries of where it starts and where it stops is very, very much to the essence of what Moshe Rabbeinu's charge and his job is. If Moshe Rabbeinu himself tries to be part of heaven and earth, he tries to be this combination called Tzipora, you know, Nishtahinu, Nishtaher, Moshe Rabbeinu will not be able to discharge his role as the Isha Elohim. Hashem pulls him up to the heavens and tells him he can't really be connected down here. He can't really be fully connected down here. At the same time, as there is a notion of a Yisro, of that which potentially can become connected. Yisro does represent, as we learned in the Medrash earlier this morning, the Shachem Karev, the neighbor who's not naturally connected but can attain connection through proximity, through making themselves close. Sometimes. And sometimes. There's a Yisro and there's an Erev Rav. There's the positive additions, expansions, and there are the not positive expansions. There's the marriage of Tzipora to Moshe Rabbeinu, which has its element of positivity, bringing Yisro in. Yisro was Zocha to add a parsha to the Torah, add this whole thing of the judges and everything else. And at the same time, there's a time also where Moshe Rabbeinu has to be somehow pulled back from that. Tzipora is a bird. She's a bird. She's fast like a bird, right? Which implies to some degree her inclination to the spirit beyond the nation of Midian from which she came. And she can purify like the bird by taking that which is naturally low down and bringing it up, which is the story of Tzipora, of Yisro, of all the positive additions which can exist with the Jewish people. However, at the same time, she also lands, perches herself to some degree on the ground, and Moshe Rabbeinu was not going to be able to be there. So what am we left with? Clarity? No. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Yisro yes, Erev Rav no. For Miriam should be married, Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't be married. There is this delicate, delicate world of connection that Moshe Rabbeinu creates here in Parshas Yisro. Amo yeh, hun amo misht. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. There's much more to say. I just want to try to hop around to grab in quickly just two quick things. One, which is just an interesting thing to note, especially now that we learned about Miriam last week and Zipporah this week. I know we left part of the story of Miriam out, which was this story that we're discussing a little bit today about Miriam and Moshe, when we talked about Miriam last week. But it's such an interesting thing. See, Miriam, her first great move was getting her father and mother to get back together again. And from that she got, remember, all the Jewish men and women to get back together again. And then she sees her brother separates from his wife, too. And she tries to get them back together again. And Hashem says to Miriam, not this time. This time it's not what's supposed to happen. Last time it gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu. This time it would be the end of Moshe Rabbeinu. Don't do it this time. Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Midian, brings Yisroel. Fantastic thing. Moshe Rabbeinu, in a certain sense, right, this is his first thing. You know, he goes out and he gets Yisroel, he marries Yisroel, brings him to the Jewish people. And then you figure, okay, look, I did so well with Yisroel, now I go back to Mitzrayim, let me get some other, right? I'll bring the Erev Rav. And Hashem says, not this time. Not this time. In the worlds of connection, in the worlds of separation, sometimes yes, and sometimes not. And that's the very ambiguity that we're trying to talk about here today. That's sort of like this bird, which is between the heavens and the earth. You know, sometimes yeah, and sometimes not. Sometimes it's up there, sometimes it's down here. You got to know where to find it. You got to know where to find it. You got to know where to apply it. The other note which I wanted to make to you in closing is, so Yisro hears, and he comes and he visits Moshe Rabbeinu. And what does he do? He sees that Moshe Rabbeinu is engaged with the people all day long. From morning till night, they're lining up to ask him questions. And what does Yisro say? He says to Moshe Rabbeinu, this isn't going to work. You're going to fail. The people are going to fail if you're down here with them all the time. You know what you need to do? You need to delegate. But he doesn't just say to him, you need to delegate. He says to him, you should be, for the people, you should be with Hashem. You'll hear from Hashem. Then you'll have these other people. They'll be the ones who will judge. They're going to interact with the people all the time. They'll respond to their questions. They have a question of God. They'll come to you, and you will go to Hashem. So Yisro, who in a sense is the symbol of Moshe Rabbeinu's appropriate expansion to interact with, bring in the nations of the world, and of course, in that way, it's of course to be interacting with the people. Yisro, who's Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law, and is bringing back Zipporah and the two sons, reuniting Moshe Rabbeinu with his normal family, right? Yisro sees what's happening. And he says, one second. Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to be more godly. You have to separate. Now that's an irony. Yisro, who's telling Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, here, I'm bringing you back your wife and children. He's telling Moshe Rabbeinu, look, you don't answer people so much. You be for the people, Mulha Elohim. You be before HaKadosh Baruch. This tension of attachment, of separation, of when we can expand to include and when we cannot, is what this whole thing is about. What this whole piece that Yisro adds to the Torah is about. And there is no clear, simple solution, result, formula that it follows. It's like Zipporah, right? It purifies because of its ability to soar. But it's between and betwixt, and sometimes yes, and sometimes not.